ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey News Daily fans, I'm Dominique Bayens. Sam Hawley will be along in a tick, but I just wanted to let you know about my new podcast, Expanse, The Nanup 4. What would you do if someone you loved vanished and you discover the person she's been living with isn't who they said they were?
Is he, you know, a murderer?
A self-styled cult leader.
It's just not knowing the emptiness, really, that just kills you.
This is the bizarre story of The Nanup 4. Binge all episodes now. Search Expanse on ABC Listen and iView.
Donald Trump's dislike of the press has repeatedly seen him refuse to attend the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, D.C., until this year. He'd taken his seat not long before a 31-year-old tried to burst into the function room armed with guns and knives. Today we speak to Missy Ryan, staff writer at The Atlantic, who was in the room, about the security failings and Trump's response. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Missy, let's set the scene first of all. You arrived at the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. It's a ritzy affair, right? Everyone's dressed in black tie, looking their best, and Trump and most of his administration is there. So just paint a picture for me.
So the Washington Hilton is this huge, sprawling hotel. And every April, hundreds and hundreds of journalists and government officials, politicians, business executives, some celebrities descend upon the Hilton for the White House Correspondents Association dinner. It was the first time that the president attended this event. He's boycotted it for his whole first term. And, you know, he has had a famously adversarial relationship with the press. And so it was kind of a surprise that he was going to be there. So we all go down to the ballroom. There is security screening these mag gates that were, I think, two levels down from the lobby. So you had to go quite far in down into the hotel in order to show your ticket or show your ticket again. I think you had to do it once up above and then get screened for any sort of threat. It was about 15 minutes into the dinner after President Trump had showed up, where all of a sudden we hear screaming, people were shouting to get down. I heard a big crash. And everybody was diving under the tables, and there was Secret Service or police climbing over people, trying to get to the stage area, to the dais where President Trump, his wife, Vice President Vance, and a number of other people were seated.
At this point, Donald Trump, the First Lady, and the Vice President, J.D. Vance, and others, they're sitting at this long table, a high table at the front of the room.
Yep.
There's around 2,000 attendees. You've all hit the ground when you've heard these noises, and there's a whole heap of confusion. Just tell me about that.
Yeah, so according to the footage that we saw after the fact, Vance's production team got to him first, and then the president's team kind of swarmed him and took him out just seconds later, essentially. And what we heard was that they, you know, were holding somewhere on the premises briefly before they left. You know, the president said last night at the news conference that he really wanted to return and continue with the event, but the Secret Service would deemed it, you know, insufficiently safe.
We wanted to stay tonight. I will tell you, I fought like hell to stay. But they, it was protocol. They said, please, sir, because they didn't know a lot of.
And Donald Trump was actually asked about that evacuation on 60 Minutes on CBS. He sort of said that he delayed his exit in a way.
It was a little bit me. I wanted to see what was happening. And I wasn't making it that easy for him. I wanted to see what was going on. And by that time, we started to.
He did that before, during the first assassination attempt. It seemed like he delayed his removal from the stage.
Yeah, I mean, I think Donald Trump, if nothing else, can sense a political window opening. And, you know, this certainly seemed to be something that he was comfortable talking about after the fact, comfortable sort of anchoring the news cycle. He praised the Secret Service and the security officials.
Beautifully done. He was just saying how quickly everybody acted, law enforcement, Secret Service in particular in this case, but law enforcement, Marco had the same thing.
But there are ways in which it is beneficial for the president. You know, he looks presidential. He looks like he is brave and courageous, and those things could be good for President Trump. So, you know, it was a sign of really, for me, the normalization of political violence in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, the third assassination attempt on President Trump. And, you know, it's not just him. You know, there are other politicians who have been threatened or had threats carried out. There are, you know, judges who are under assault. You know, it's just a kind of sad fact of American life now that these things are becoming increasingly common.
Yeah, and of course, Charlie Kirk, who was assassinated last year, his wife was actually in the room, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. She was.
I mean, what a terrifying moment for everyone in the room, including yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it was startling and confusing for sure. People got on their cell phones, even while they're still on the floor, to try to text colleagues and loved ones and try to find out what happened. But, you know, it seems like the Secret Service, to the extent that they weren't able to secure the perimeter and control the facility, you know, they obviously succeeded in getting the president and the vice president and then a number of other VIPs like Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, other cabinet secretaries, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, the Health Secretary, all of those people were there. Yes. We actually reported today that it was basically at least the first six or seven officials in the line of succession, with the exception of number three, who's the president pro tem of the Senate, Senator Charles Grassley. With the exception of him, all of the senior officials who would, like, in theory, take over for the president if he died were in the same room, which, you know, has raised a lot of security questions after the fact.
Well, as you mentioned, Donald Trump, he did hold this press conference about 2 hours later. He was still, of course, dressed in his tuxedo.
Well, thank you very much. That was very unexpected, but incredibly acted upon by Secret Service and law enforcement. And
so just explain to me how he was, what he was saying, the message that you took away from that press conference.
Yeah, so it was a really striking moment. He was there, as you say, in his tuxedo. So were, you know, the people he was flanked by, FBI Director Kash Patel, the acting attorney general was there, a number of different officials, the First Lady even made an appearance. And it was actually, you know, a very different Trump than we normally see in the briefing room. He was much less combative with the media than he normally is, and he was very complimentary of the White House Correspondents Association and its leaders, and promised to reschedule the dinner.
This was an event dedicated to freedom of speech that was supposed to bring together members of both parties with members of the press. And in a certain way, it did, because the fact that they just unified, I saw a room that was just totally unified. It was, in one way, very beautiful, a very beautiful thing to see.
It was notable to me how different he seemed in his public persona and his kind of character that he's displaying on screen than he often is.
So, Missy, let's have a bit more of a look at the suspect and what we do know about him. He is 31-year-old Cole Thomas Allen from California. Of course, he's now in police custody. Now, President Trump, he was interviewed on Fox News later, revealing that the suspect had written a manifesto.
And the guy is a sick guy. When you read his manifesto, he hates Christians. That's one thing for sure. He hates Christians, a hatred.
So what do we know about that at this stage?
Well, that he harbored animosity toward Trump and the officials around him, and that he seems to have been more of a lone agent than, you know, any part of any sort of organized political movement or armed movement. And that in some ways echoes the person who killed Charlie Kirk, it echoes some of the other people who have taken up arms and been radicalized in our country. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, really, for me, raises questions about social media and about, like, you know, the way that politics is being digested by ordinary citizens.
Mm. And Donald Trump, he was also asked about this manifesto on 60 Minutes, although just to note, he is not named in it.
He writes this quote, "Administration officials, they are targets." And he also wrote this, "I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes." What's your reaction
to that?
Well,
I was waiting for you to read that because I knew you would, because you're horrible people, horrible people. Yeah, he did write that. I'm not a rapist. I didn't rape anybody.
Do you think he was referring to you?
Excuse me. I'm not a pedophile. You read that crap from some sick person.
And the manifesto, it does, though, indicate, doesn't it, that the offender could have been after administration officials as well, not just Donald Trump.
Exactly.
So how significant is that in your mind?
I think that is significant because, you know, unlike Butler, Pennsylvania, or the guy who was at Trump's golf course in Florida, this seems to have been a more broad set of targets. And I think that, you know, just from a personal perspective, that could really influence how these senior leaders respond. You know, nobody is going to take kindly to that. And it really could kind of energize the response. And, you know, I think presumably they're doing a very energetic search of this person's life, his social media, his contacts, all of that.
Well, Missy, this is the third, as we said, unsuccessful attempt on Donald Trump's life. He says he's not going to live in fear.
But I can't be so concerned that you can't function. No, I'm here. It's a dangerous profession. Abraham Lincoln, I mean, you go through the people that have gone through this where they got them. But the people that do the most, the people that make the biggest impact, they're the ones that they go after.
But as you say, it really highlights the threat of political violence in America, doesn't it? It must be deeply concerning what's unfolding.
It is. It's just, you know, I mean, there's political violence, but there's also a lot of non-political violence in this country. We have, you know, the availability of guns and the availability of, you know, very destructive guns is a fact of American life. And that, you know, has a big impact. Not, you know, it's not just politicians. It's people at church or schools. So it's not surprising. We've had political violence, obviously. You know, we've had presidents who have been assassinated, and that isn't new. And we've had civil war and lots of episodes in our history, but it seemed like we left that behind. And, you know, it is kind of coinciding of the polarization of our country politically and societally with the availability of weapons. And, you know, I think social media also plays a role. So it does seem like a problem on the rise. And as I said, it's not just the president, it's not just the members of the cabinet, but lots of lawmakers have been attacked, their families, judges, public officials at different levels.
All right, well, Donald Trump, he continually, of course, talks about this ballroom he is building at the White House, and he says this is exactly why he needs it, for safety.
I didn't want to say this, but this is why we have to have all of the attributes of what we're planning at the White House. It's actually a larger room, and it's much more secure. It's drone-proof, it's bulletproof glass. We need the ballroom. That's why Secret Service, that's why the military are demanding it.
But, Missy, what do you think? Did the protocols work, or is there a fundamental problem with how this all unfolded?
Well, you know, we actually had a spirited debate among my colleagues earlier today about that. You know, I think that there you can look at it different ways, that either the Secret Service failed because that person got so deep within the building and was able to make it so close to, you know, as we were talking about earlier, this like extremely unusual collection of senior officials. But on the other hand, you know, they were never supposed to control the entire hotel. They were like regular guests of the hotel. You know, my colleagues and I had a drink at the lobby bar just before the event started. And there's, you know, regular guests at the hotel and, you know, people who are visiting. So they did protect the president and they, you know, got people out. And so from that perspective, they were successful. I mean, you can't shut off the whole country. And, you know, that's the challenge that you have at political events. We saw this in Butler. You know, did they create a big enough security zone? In that case, they didn't. But thankfully, the results in this case weren't as bad.
All right. And just then, Missy, your reflections. What an evening. As a reporter, as a guest, what do you take away from this whole event? I assume you wouldn't want to relive it.
No, I mean, it was, you know, unnerving for lots of people. I think that for me, it's just kind of a sad statement on where the country is that this is happening at an event that's in some ways, you know, it's a fraud event in some ways, but it's also about our system. And in theory, it's about the role that a free media plays in a democracy. And to have that the site of violence is just another really, I think, sad commentary.
Missy Ryan is a staff writer at The Atlantic magazine. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Cinema Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.